Chapter 38. After Willa's unsettling warning, the elders gave their reluctant support of our plans to travel to Elysium and then meet with the Blood Crown. The cautious backing mostly came from those concerned about our safety, but I could sense a few simply didn't agree with any of that. Those who thought war was inevitable. Lord Ambrose and Lord Gregory were two of them, but I didn't think they truly wanted war. It was just that they couldn't see a way around it, and I hoped we proved them wrong. The meeting was adjourned, and there was one thing left to do. We were to greet the public, along with the elders and Castile's parents. Their presence would be a show of support and approval, and then Castile and I would be alone. Of course, we still needed to speak with Kieran, but we would have to process everything, and maybe even live a little before we embarked on our journey to Elysium. I lingered as everyone filed out of the room, making their way back to the Temple of Nyctos. I wanted to speak to Willa, who had taken her time rising from the table, or she simply knew I wanted to speak with her. Either way, I had many questions and only a handful of minutes to speak to her with only Vanetta waiting by the door. "May I ask you a question?" I said. Willa looked over at me, her golden brown eyes alight with the same strange, knowing glint that had been present when I first met her. "You are the queen. You can ask whatever you like." I didn't think being queen gave me carte blanche for questions, which I had many I wanted to ask. "Why were you at the Red Pearl?" I asked.
"I have a wandering soul that has a thirst for exploration," she answered,
and based on her diary, I could agree with that. "But isn't it dangerous for you?" Her laugh was throaty.
"The best kind of adventures always carry a hint of danger, as I'm sure you know," she said,
and my cheeks warmed.
"And it had been many years since I'd been to Macedonia. I had the strangest urge to travel there."
Her strange urge roused my suspicions about exactly what she was. "Why did you send me to the room Castile was in?" Her red lips curved upward in a slight smile.
"It simply felt right to do so."
"That is all?" She nodded as she approached me.
"One's instinct should always be trusted."
"You're a changeling, aren't you?" When she nodded, I asked, "So your instinct is far more accurate than others?" A soft laugh left her.
"Some would say that. Some would even say that instinctual accuracy has led me to become one of the greatest seer Atlantia has ever known."
"A seer? I knew it."
"When I saw you in the Red Pearl, I knew you wore a mask, not the one that hid your identity, but the one you were forced to wear for many years beneath the veil. One you didn't know you even wore. I saw you, and I knew you were the maiden."
Willa's eyes searched mine as tiny bumps rose all over my skin.
"I knew you were a second daughter, one who shared the blood of the gods."
Her gaze flicked over my shoulder to the door.
"And I knew he was seeking the same thing that led you to the Pearl that night."
My brows knitted.
"He was there to discuss his plans."
Thick curls swayed as she shook her head.
"That was one of the reasons, but deep inside he was searching for the same as you."
She paused. "To live." Air lodged in my throat.
"Can I share something with you?"
Willa leaned in, touching my arm. A faint charge of energy danced over my skin.
"You weren't the only one seeking sanctuary that night. He was in need of shelter, one that could bear the weight of his desires, his love, and his pain. And he found it. He may have given you freedom, but you have given him more than you could ever know."
Emotion clogged my throat, stealing whatever words I had to speak.
"Don't forget that," she said.
"I won't," I managed. Willa smiled.
"Penelope," Ilawana called from the doorway. "Are you ready?"
Inhaling deeply, I nodded.
"I am,"
I replied, then lowered my voice.
"Thank you for answering my questions."
She inclined her head.
"Always. And if you become curious enough to ask those other questions I'm sure are brewing in your head, I'll be more than happy to answer them or refer you to a certain chapter."
Thank you, I stuttered out, and then started to run.
"Your Majesty."
Willa stopped me, and when I faced her, her smile was gone.
"A seer cannot always know things about another, nor can most close their eyes and look past the now into tomorrow and the days that come after."
"I cannot," she told me, and those tiny bumps returned.
"Atlanteans can be superstitious, even if they don't believe in prophecies. Do you know why they don't?"
My skin chilled.
"No." "Because we believe that the days yet to be seen are not foretold, that even what the gods may have in store for us is not written in stone,"
Willa said, the golden flecks in her eyes burning brightly.
"But what is written in bone is different, and what is not believed should not be ignored."
Heart thumping and aware that Ilawana was waiting, I stepped closer to Willa.
"Are you speaking of the prophecy the unseen believe in?"
Willa touched my arm once more, and that same charge of energy swirled over my skin.
"Your namesake was so wise. She could see beyond the day before her, but what she saw is not what they believe. You are not the great conspirator, but one of two who will stand between what is awakened and the retribution it seeks to reap against man and God."
Willa's words haunted my steps through the palace and the temple of Nyctos. While the logical part of me wanted to rebel at the idea of any part of the prophecy being true, I felt some measure of relief hearing her say that I wasn't the great conspirator the unseen believed me to be. But if what she spoke was true, and how could it not be when she knew so much else, she had to be speaking of the Blood Crown and Castile and me. I imagined the Ascended sought retribution for a lot, but what could have awakened? And all I could think of was Malek. Obviously, for me to be here, he had to have risen. The low murmur of voices drew me from my thoughts as we passed the statue of Nyctos and his silver-white flames. Hysa stood at the doors. The elders had already stepped outside onto the balcony, joined by Willa. Castile's parents waited with the commander. Ilawana asked if Castile or I wanted to change before we greeted the people of Evimon. While there had been a brief moment where I'd pictured myself in a pretty gown, I'd declined, only taking enough time to tame the strands of hair that had slipped free from my braid. It was unlikely that the people would see me in anything other than what I wore today, or things like it, for some time, and it seemed rather pointless to present myself in another fashion. Besides, it only delayed us speaking with Kieran, and me talking with Castile about what Willa had shared. So we stood there, as we had been when we first rode into Atlantia earlier. It had truly been a long day.
"You two ready?"
Valen asked. Castile glanced at me, and I nodded. "We are." I looked to my side where Vanetta remained in her wolven form, and Kieran stood in his mortal one. The remaining wolven, including Delano, flanked us. Nail and Emil were among them. I refocused on Castile's parents.
"Will you introduce us?"
Ilioana shook her head.
We will stand beside you, but the eldest member of the council will introduce you and Castile.
Remembering who the oldest elder was, I said, Willa?
Valin nodded as he eyed his son, who grinned. I feel like I'm missing something, Valin murmured.
You're not, I said, when Castile opened his mouth, having no idea how no one in Atlantia appeared to know about Willa's journal. I promise. Castile shot me a look, which I ignored.
This won't take very long,
Ilioana said, a thread of weariness in her voice. It had been a long day for them, too.
And then you two can retire, or do whatever you please.
A bed would be nice,
Castile said, and I really hoped he didn't elaborate on that thought.
Will you two remain in the palace? I asked.
I hope you will.
As do I,
Castile agreed. Valin looked at Ilioana before nodding.
We plan to stay, at least until you have returned from Elysium and your meeting with the Blood Crown. We figured you would want us as your surrogates until then.
They will handle minor issues that arise during the time we're absent,
Castile explained quickly.
Usually the advisor, or in rare cases, the council steps in.
I nodded. Ilioana's gaze moved between us, and I knew it was time. Hysa and another guard stepped forward, each grasping the handle of a door. Kieran's gaze met mine, and then Castile's. He grinned as he joined Emil and Nail. My heart started pounding as the doors began to inch open. The sound of the crowd grew louder as the last of the sunlight shone through the ceiling and seeped through the opening in the doors. The balcony was rounded and long enough that each of the elders stood to the left and right against the black stone railing. Willa had been waiting toward the back of the balcony, but now she walked forward, her curls a blue-black in the faint sunlight. She spoke, and a hush traveled throughout the crowd. I couldn't be sure what she said, because my blood thumped in my ears and my chest hummed. All I was aware of was that Castile's parents had moved to stand on either side of us, and the utter surrealness of Miss Willa, the Miss Willa, about to introduce us to the kingdom as king and queen. Never in 1,000 years could I have ever dreamt up this moment. A laugh bubbled up, but I managed to squash it. Now was not the time for hysterical giggles. Castile reached between us and took my hand. My gaze snapped to his. Those eyes of his were like endless pools of warm honey, and when I breathed in, all I tasted was chocolate and berries. I love you, I whispered, tears stinging my eyes. Castile smiled. Two dimples appeared, one after the other. I saw a hint of fang, and a wholly inappropriate twist started up low in my stomach. And then we were walking forward, out into what remained of the evening sun and the breezy air, to stand above a crowd that nearly stopped my heart. There had to be thousands, tens of thousands. There was a sea of people in the courtyard below the temple, some standing on the rolling green hill and beyond, on the nearby buildings' balconies and in open windows. People even stood on the roofs of the shorter buildings. As far as I could see, the streets of Evimon were filled.
With the support and respect of the Council of Elders and the former King and Queen of Atlantia, the abdication and ascension of the crown have taken place.
Willa's voice carried from the balcony, falling upon the people like soft summer rain.
It is a great honor that I introduce he who is born of the first kingdom, created from the blood and ash of those who fell before him,
the second son of the former King Valin and Queen Iloana, Castile, Hawkthrone Danir, the King of Blood and Ash. My breath caught at the title that belonged to the Ascended, to the Blood Crown. Castile stiffened beside me, but the crowd erupted in shouts and cheers, roaring applause that echoed throughout the valleys and the streets like thunder. Willa held up her fist, and silence fell.
He is joined by she who carries the blood of the King of Gods, the Lysa, and the true heir of Atlantia, Penelope Balfour Danir, the Queen of Flesh and Fire.
I jolted, my heart stuttering. There was silence, acute and so intimidating. Howls came from behind, startling me. Long, keening calls that were answered throughout the city. Below and farther out, men and women, the old and young in mortal form, answered in deep, throaty howls, ending in high-pitched whoops. Then a loud thump came from the yard. A man slammed his foot into the dirt. The woman beside him followed, and then another, and another, just like the day I'd arrived in Sion's Cove. But these were not just wolven. They were Atlantean and mortal, their feet pounding the dirt and their fists striking stone. The sound reverberating through the yard, the streets, the balconies, and from the terraces. Many were on their knees, slamming their hands down.
This is good, right? I asked. They are sending a message,
Iloana said from behind us.
What kind?
Castile smiled down at me.
That they are yours, and that if need be, they will go to war for you.
War was what we were trying to prevent, but I supposed their willingness was good to know.
You mean that they are ours?
His smile grew, but he didn't answer. The slamming of fists and feet ceased, and silence fell around us. Tiny hairs rose all over my body as I slowly looked out at the city. Tens of thousands of heads were lifted now, watching us, or me, expectantly. Castile squeezed my hand.
They are waiting for your response.
My response? I have a feeling that a thank you would not suffice. Castile choked on what sounded an awful lot like a laugh. I looked at him, my brows raised.
Sorry.
My eyes narrowed. You don't sound sorry. He bit down on his lower lip, but the corners of his mouth curved up. Not one, but two stupid dimples appeared. You're so annoying, I muttered.
Endearingly annoying,
he corrected, and his father sighed. More like, it's a good thing you're pretty, I grumbled under my breath. Castile tugged me back to his side, folding an arm around me. Before I could protest, he lowered his mouth until it was only an inch or so from mine.
More like it's a good thing you love me unconditionally.
That too, I sighed. Castile lowered his head, kissing me. And then there was nothing quick or chaste about the way his lips claimed mine. It might have even been a little inappropriate, or a lot, but so was the way I sank against the length of his body. I jerked as howls and cheers erupted from the wolven and the Atlanteans in the yard, and from the city, mingling with catcalls and hoots. Castile chuckled against my lips as he pressed his forehead to mine.
Our people are really into displays of public affection, in case you haven't noticed.
I noticed. Face, surely the color of a blood tree, I looked out at the city. To our people. Willa turned back to the crowd, which had quieted once more.
From the blood and ash, and the kingdom of flesh and fire, Our king and queen have ascended the throne, sworn to defend Atlantia from enemies known and unseen, to rule with kindness and strength, and to lead with compassion and justice. From this moment to their last moments, they are your protectors.
Castile's brilliant amber eyes caught mine. He took our joined hands and lifted them high into the air, and the people celebrated. The people of Atlantia were still celebrating the ascension of the crown, based on the joyous noise that could be heard faintly from within the royal chambers. And Kieran had not been joking when he'd said that our rooms were the entirety of the East Wing. The foyer opened into a sitting area, and on either side, doors led to his and hers spaces. I wasn't sure why they needed both, but there was also a private dining room furnished with a round table, still large enough to seat several people. An atrium outfitted with comfortable chairs and settees was also present, with plush rugs and night-blooming roses that had opened their delicate petals at the first sign of the moon. The bedchamber was excessive. A canopy bed sat in the center of the room, and it took up nearly the entirety of the space. The curtains were tied back, revealing fresh linens and a mound of soft pillows. There were only two chaises situated in front of the doors that led to a private terrace and garden, and a large wooden chest sat just inside the bedchamber. The wardrobes were housed in a room the size of my bedchamber in Macedonia. Castile had explained it was called a walk-in closet, and I thought it could very well be called a live-in closet. The bathing chamber, well, it made the one in Scion's Cove appear paltry in comparison. The toilet was hidden behind a wall, and there were two vanities, an indecently large soaking tub, and the life-changing shower stall that boasted multiple shower heads and stone benches. And there were many indecent things I could think of taking place in there. From the main entryway, a door opened to the staff hallway and the private stairs that led upstairs to rooms reserved for guests of the king and queen. Those who had traveled with us were now settling in, and Castile's parents had just left after advising that if there was anything we wished to change about the quarters, we only needed to let Rose know. Since very few items in the space couldn't have belonged to either Iloana or Valen, I had a feeling that many of the things already in the rooms were new, and that they had planned for this moment from the second they returned to Evimon. While Castile spoke with one of the staff members to have food sent to our quarters, I roamed the rooms, searching for the personal items that had been sent over in advance. I found them sprinkled throughout. An adorable stuffed bear that had surely seen better days rested on a shelf. Several leather-bound books lined the shelves in the main sitting area. Some were children's books, and the rest appeared to be a collection of fables. There were no textbooks to be found. Grinning, I discovered two training swords hanging in the hall between the sitting room and the dining area, their blades dull. Several paintings hung in the dining room, and the one of lilacs, gray stone, and clear blue waters had to be Castile's. It was the cavern. In the walk-in closet, I found the clothing we'd brought with us and the things that had been sent ahead, already hung up and folded. Inside the chest was a trove of weapons that pierced flesh and stone, some made of a golden metal, some steel, and others bloodstone. On the other side, between the doors to the bathing chamber and the closet, were two raised stone podiums with a thin ledge. Inherently, I knew what they were for, having a wispy memory of spotting something similar in Wayfair Castle. Reaching up, I lifted the crown from my head. The gilded bone was smooth and cool to the touch, reminding me of the woven bone in my dagger. Carefully, I placed it on the podium, letting it rest on the ledge. the queen of flesh and fire. Flesh and fire. I had heard that phrase twice before. Castile's mother had said it when she first saw me, and it had been mentioned in the prophecy that Alistair recited. But I wasn't the great conspirator. And the title? Well, it sounded badass. Grinning, I turned from the crown and wandered over to the nightstand. I found a wooden toy horse. I picked it up, marveling at the intricacy. No detail had been spared. I turned it over, surprised to see Malik's name carved underneath. I ran my thumb over the strokes in the wood.
"Malik made that,"
Castile said from the doorway. I turned, watching him remove the crown and place it on the pedestal next to mine.
"It was for my birthday, my 6th, I believe. Gods, that was forever ago."
He paused.
"Which reminds me, I don't think we know each other's birthdays, do we?"
"I'm sure we..." I laughed as I realized that he was correct. I placed the horse back where I found it. There was so much we knew about each other, and yet so many things we didn't. "When is your birthday?" He grinned as he leaned against the wall.
"I was born on the first day of the 6th month. You?"
My smile started to fade. "I was born in the 4th month."
"And?"
An eyebrow rose. I drifted forward. I don't know. I mean, I don't remember. I have these vague memories of celebrating a birthday when I was younger, but after my parents died, neither Ian nor I really celebrated. I lifted a shoulder. And I guess, over the years, we sort of forgot the date. So we'd picked a random day in April for me and December for him. His grin had disappeared. "Pick a day." "For what?"
"For your birthday. Pick a day in April, and that will be your birthday."
A pang of sadness lanced my heart. Victor asked me once when my birthday was. He said the same thing. "Pick a day in April." I let out a low breath. I picked the 20th day, and that was when he gave me the woven dagger.
"Perfect."
The smile returned, but it didn't reach his eyes.
"How are you holding up?"
"I'm okay. Like, I don't feel different. I mean, maybe I do? I don't know." I laughed self-consciously as I approached him. He pushed off the wall. "I feel calm, though. How about you?"
"I feel the same."
He opened his arms and I went to him, looping mine around his waist, pressing my cheek to his chest. I closed my eyes and sank into his embrace, taking in his spicy, piney scent.
"Though I have to admit that when that crown turned gold, I was relieved. I wanted a crown as spiffy as yours."
I laughed. "I talked to Willa."
"I noticed."
His lips brushed the top of my head.
"I was very curious about what you two were talking about. And sort of jealous."
Grinning, I stretched up and kissed the corner of his lips. "Nothing your dirty mind will approve of." He pouted. It looked ridiculous, and yet adorable, endearingly so. I told him that she was the woman who'd been at the Red Pearl and had sent me to his room, much to his surprise. He'd had no idea that any of the elders traveled to Solus, but considering her diary, it made sense. I didn't tell him what she'd said about him. I didn't think he'd want someone knowing the inner workings of his heart. But I shared with him what she'd said about the prophecy. Castile was still a bit doubtful as we walked back toward the sitting area.
"It's not that I can't believe it,"
he said, his arm draped over my shoulders.
"I just find it hard to believe that if there is one that may be true, how can there not be others? Ones we haven't heard of."
"I don't know," I said. Maybe prophecies aren't meant to be known.
That sounds like something a seer would say.
I giggled. It does. One dimple appeared as he smoothed a hand over my cheek, tucking back a strand of wayward hair.
The food should be here soon, and I know you're probably tired and have already been eyeing that shower. I know I have been, but I wanted to talk to Kieran first. You up for that?
Of course.
Good, because he'll be down here in a few minutes,
he said, and I laughed again. I saw it. The churning of vivid golden sparks in his eyes. His lips parted until the tips of his fangs appeared.
I love that sound. I love how much more you laugh now.
I do too, I admitted quietly. And it's because of you. His eyes closed briefly as he dipped his forehead to mine, and a long moment passed with us just standing there.
Before Kieran gets here, I wanted to ask you something.
That sounds serious.
It kind of is.
He lifted his head.
Have you felt any hunger?
For food? I drew out the question. His lips twitched.
Not the kind you're thinking of.
Oh, my eyes widened. For blood. He grinned then.
You don't have to whisper it.
I didn't.
You totally did.
Whatever. I bit down on my lip. I don't think so. I mean, I haven't felt that gnawing ache again. I think I would know if I had.
It's not always like that, my queen.
My queen. I liked that. Almost as much as I liked it when he called me princess.
Not that I'd admit that to him.
How does it feel?
You feel inexplicably tired, even after sleeping. You'll eat, but you'll still feel hunger. Food will eventually lose its appeal,
he told me.
You'll be easier to irritate, which wouldn't be new for you.
Hey, I smacked his arm.
Perhaps you need to feed now,
he teased, eyes glittering.
Once you get to the point where food no longer eases your hunger, you'll need to feed.
I nodded.
Okay. You probably wouldn't need to feed by now anyway, if we're basing it on when Atlanteans need to feed,
he said.
But you may be different. You may not even need to, but I wanted to check in.
I searched to find even a flicker of unease at the possibility of feeding, and found none. When a knock sounded, Castile let Kieran in. The wolven appeared to have managed a shower and a change of clothing. A fresh white shirt and black breeches had replaced what he'd worn earlier. I was jealous.
We won't keep you long,
Castile said, coming to join me.
But there is something important we wanted to ask you.
Kieran raised a brow as he glanced between us.
Is it about the joining?
For the second time in 24 hours, I choked on my breath.
What? Am I wrong?
Kieran crossed his arms.
Yeah,
I nodded while Castile appeared to do his best not to burst into laughter.
That so isn't where we were going with that. And by the way, the joining isn't necessary, right? I'm a deity. I have an incomprehensible lifespan now. Well,
Castile drew out the word. I looked over at him, and then it struck me. What I'd worried about when I first learned that I could be immortal, or the closest thing to it. I'll outlive you, won't I?
Deities have doubled the lifespan of Atlanteans, maybe even longer if they take the deep sleep,
Castile explained. I didn't feel a single ounce of worry coming from him while I was 5 seconds away from throwing myself onto the floor.
But we have a very long time before we have to stress over that.
I'm stressing over it now.
Obviously,
stated Kieran.
I'm bonded to you, all the wolven are. Not in the same way the bonds worked with the elemental lines, but a wolven would still be the connecting piece that fuses two lifelines together.
He frowned.
Or three, I suppose. It's just your life that his would be bonded to.
I stared at him.
Anyway, it could be any wolven.
Kieran shrugged. I continued staring at him.
Okay, that's good to know.
Castile patted my shoulder, and I sat down on the thick black cushion of a chair.
But that really wasn't what we wanted to discuss with you.
No shit,
Kieran said. Blinking, I shook my head. We were about to ask him to be our advisor. Tomorrow we would travel to Elysium, and then into Solus.
So, I did not need to think about any of that right now. We wanted to ask if you would do us the honor of being the advisor to the crown,
Castile began.
I had this whole speech planned in my head about how you've been a brother to me and that there is no one I trust more, but now things are just kind of awkward, so yeah. We would like for you to be our advisor.
Now it was Kieran who stared at us, his eyes wide, and I felt the coolness of shock from him, something I didn't think he often felt.
You're surprised, I said. How can that be? You have known that Castile trusts you, as do I. Yeah, but...
Kieran rubbed the heel of his palm down the center of his chest.
The advisor to the crown is usually someone far older than me, with more experience and connections. The king and queen are usually people far older than us,
Castile replied dryly.
I know, but why wouldn't you choose my father?
He asked.
He would serve you well. But not as good as you,
Castile told him.
You don't have to accept. No, I accept,
Kieran confirmed.
It would be an honor.
His wide, pale blue eyes darted between us.
I really thought you'd ask my father.
I was shocked that he'd thought that.
Literally no one else entered my mind.
Castile stepped forward, clasping the back of Kieran's neck.
It would always have been you.
What I felt from Kieran warmed my chest. He was surprised, but proud, and swimming in that warmth. I swore tears glimmered in his eyes as he said,
It would be my honor to serve as advisor to both of you.
He repeated,
From this moment to the last moment. It is our honor,
Castile said, pulling him in for a one-armed hug.
Seriously.
Kieran returned the embrace. Seeing them hug it out brought a smile to my face. Friendship was a far stronger bond than even something the gods could create.
Okay.
Kieran cleared his throat as he stepped back.
I know there's normally a ceremony,
Castile said, glancing over at me.
It's like the one we did in the throne room of the temple.
He turned back to Kieran.
We could do it when we have the larger coronation.
Kieran nodded.
I would like for my parents and sisters to be there.
Sisters? My smile grew. He was already thinking of his baby sister.
As would I,
Castile said. He dragged a hand over his head.
I feel like I need a drink. Or five.
Castile chuckled.
I think all of us could use one after today.
He turned to the credenza where several bottles and crystal glasses with vines carved into them sat.
What would you like?
He asked me.
Whatever you're having.
An eyebrow rose.
Intriguing.
I shook my head.
You know,
Kieran said, looking over at me as he sat in an identical chair.
I've never heard of a response like that to a crowning before. The people are happy. That's what they're celebrating.
I imagine they're relieved that there'll be no more tension over how long Cass's parents have ruled. I sat back as Castile sent me a heated look while pouring three glasses of something I would probably regret later.
I think it has more to do with you,
Castile said. Because I'm special? I rested my chin on my fist and rolled my eyes. A unique snowflake. He laughed deeply.
Hell yeah, you are.
Still, not as special as those who could shift forms. I would never get over that. But the reaction was probably also in response to the fact that their prince ascended. My eyes widened as I sat up straight. Oh my gods, I just thought of something.
Can't wait to hear this,
Kieran murmured. Nyctos is protected by guards, I said, remembering what had been said during the council meeting.
That wasn't exactly breaking news.
The Draken either went to sleep or protect the resting place of the gods, right? Kieran took the drink that Castile offered him.
Yes.
My stomach dropped to my toes. And the guards that Ian told us we need, would they happen to be the ones protecting Nyctos' resting place? Castile put my drink in my hand.
Are you just now realizing who and what Nyctos' guards are?
Yes. Yes, I totally was.
We're supposed to get the Draken to help us, I exclaimed.
Those who are basically able to take the form of a dragon. Castile stared at me, nodding slowly.
I thought you realized that.
No, I shouted, and Kieran's eyebrows flew up. Yeah, I remember being told that, but I've also been told a lot of things since then, and good gods, I'm going to get to see a draken?
Yes, my queen.
Castile sat on the arm of my chair.
You may get to see a draken.
I don't know why you look so excited, Kieran remarked. The draken were a notoriously unfriendly bloodline, with temperaments that would make yours look like a small, cuddly animal's.
I lifted my right hand and extended my middle finger.
He smirked. But I have the blood of Nyctos in me, I pointed out.
And they can also breathe fire?
Kieran tipped his glass to me.
So, let's hope none of us pisses them off.